This is Fayette Forward, where we discuss trails, transit, city planning, and anything else that's on our minds.
Our goal is to keep Fayetteville moving forward in a positive, inclusive, and intentional way that benefits everyone who lives in this great city in the Ozarks.
You ready?
Come on in. Welcome to Fayette Forward. We should say welcome back to Fayette Forward because it's been a long time. We've been very busy the last few months with life, with our business, and basically with other things that don't involve this podcast. So sad it has been to be away from things. We're really excited to record today's episode, and we do plan to start interviewing guests again this summer, 2024. Currently, we are going to do an episode with just the two of us because so much stuff has happened recently and we have so many things to discuss about Fayetteville and Fayetteville moving forward specifically that we thought it was best to sit down, get caught up, and talk a bit about some of these really exciting things going on. And if you haven't listened to some of our previous episodes, be sure to check them out. We interview citizens, city officials, developers, and more. First of all, we wanted to mention that we were interviewed on I Am Northwest Arkansas with Randy Wilburn. Our episode will be available sometime in April. I Am Northwest Arkansas is one of our favorite podcasts at all, not just locally, and Randy has become a very dear friend of ours. Recently, he decided to feature a few people who've moved into town from other places, and we fell into that category, so we were honored to be interviewed by him. Another piece of exciting news on our end is that Nick joined the Fayetteville Planning Commission. He's very excited to learn more about how the sausage is made, so to speak, and hopefully he'll be able to share some insights with you from time to time.
And one thing I do want to note about that, for ethical and legal reasons, I will need to be careful about discussing certain projects when they're coming up for a vote, but hopefully I can share a bit more about the process for you over time. So I'm excited to join and looking forward to what comes ahead.
Yeah, let's go ahead and dive in. Nick, do you want to start with our favorite topic, the Veloway?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. In January, we went to Austin, Texas for a one-week trip, and we were just trying to get away from some of the cold and thought we'd go visit Meredith's sister in Austin, and her parents came down and visit us as well. But one thing we wanted to check out while we were there was something called the Veloway, and that's because we've been doing a lot of inline and quad skating, trail skating, all different kinds of skating lately. And the Veloway is a pretty unique place that was a really great opportunity to try out. And Meredith, you want to tell us a little more about that?
Sure. So the Veloway is a 23-foot wide, 3.1 mile long bicycle and inline skating track that traverses the natural terrain of South Austin. So the Veloway was constructed in the early 90s, and at the time, it was part of a remote suburban neighborhood. I believe it's called Circle C. But over time, Circle C has become much more central to the city as the city has expanded. And while it says inline skates and cyclists only, we saw plenty of roller skaters there too, and I busted out my quad roller skates and had a great time skating around, even though it did say inline skaters only. A couple of things that make the Veloway so unique that we really loved about it are that, first of all, it's really wide. I said it's 23 feet wide. It's so wide, which is really great for when you're first starting out as a skater and you're trying to learn how to slalom and you're trying to learn how to cut speed without having to abruptly stop. Another aspect that we loved about it is that there are no pedestrians whatsoever, not even allowed. So you don't have to worry about things like groups of people taking up the whole length and having to stop suddenly or not be able to pass them. And another thing is there are no dogs allowed. And anyone who has skated or even sometimes cycled will note that sometimes dogs are very unpredictable, even if they're on leash. So when you're first learning how to skate or even cycle, it can be a little bit scary if you see a dog and you're not sure what their temperament is going to be, again, whether they're leashed or not. So no dogs, no pedestrians. Another thing is no car crossings. So it's all one way on top of all of this. And as you can imagine, for someone who might be starting out either as a completely beginner skater or cyclist, or someone who's maybe only ridden a bike in a quiet neighborhood street or only ever skated in a rink or on their neighborhood street that's really quiet or a dead end, this is just a really, really great place to practice speed control and not having to worry about collisions, basically. I think that it's where, Nick, you really became confident with your outdoor skating skills, because before we went there, you were pretty nervous. After we spent maybe four or five times doing a few loops, all of a sudden he was like a different skater.
Yeah, and it's really a good place for, on the flip side, people who are professional cyclists or just very advanced amateurs who are just trying to go as fast as possible and not worry about collisions. So it was a mix. It was people who were kind of learning but able to go fast, because that is one thing about it, is you want to keep moving. It's part of the appeal of it. And actually, we saw some, cross-country...
Roller skiers,
yeah. Which was really cool. We saw two different roller skiers, and they were really into it, and it just looks like they're on cross-country skis, but it's, you know, with wheels, and it was pretty neat to see.
Yes, and fun fact, if you ever speak with Britton, who we've interviewed a number of times on this podcast, ask her about roller skiing. That's it. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yes, totally.
And the reason we're bringing it up, because this is obviously not related to Fayetteville whatsoever or even NWA, is that there is a similar project being built in Bentonville, and it's called the Bentonville Cycling Center. And we feel that this is definitely going to be worth the drive. And there's one caveat. We really, really hope that they will make this Veloway project, this whatever you want to call it. I think it's a 2 mile long bicycle track in, I forget exactly where it's located, but Nick will link it below. But I think it's on the east side of Bentonville. Don't quote me on that. Anyway, we're really excited to make the drive up there, again, with the caveat that we can take our skates, because the best part about the Veloway in Austin is we did not have to worry about dogs or kids or groups of people taking up the whole amount of space. And we love to go fast, and we love to fly, and we love to just have the feeling of the wind in our hair when we're skating and not have to worry the whole time. So we're really, really hoping that the developers, Blue Crane, I believe, that they welcome skaters as well. And the cool thing about this project, even though, again, it's not in Fayetteville, it's up in Bentonville, is that they're going to have it be more of a destination. It's going to have a covered pavilion. It's going to have real restrooms instead of the porta potties from the Veloway. And it's going to have, I believe, food, drink, and a food truck court, which this is kind of my own personal thing, but I love any sort of destination having an area for food trucks, because it just seems like people get hungry and you don't want them to leave an event or a gathering space. You want them to be able to hang out and eat and share that experience together.
And so Meredith's going to reach out to Blue Crane and find out a little bit more. And if we learn any more, we'll share it with you on a future episode. And speaking of trail skating, let's discuss trail skating in Fayetteville, because that's something we've really found a love for in the last few months.
Sure. Yeah. We wanted to start out with this topic by saying it can be a little bit intimidating to start skating on a trail. You might have skated in a rink in the past. You might have biked on the trail. But there are certain things that definitely will make it a little bit intimidating. So first of all, wear a helmet, wear elbow pads, wear knee pads, wrist guards. And I like to put gloves over my wrist guards, even when it's hot out. And in that vein, if you're going in the summertime, I recommend skating with a small backpack and a camelback. But basically, when you're first starting out, just remember that there are hills and there is debris. And those are the two things that are going to get you in your own head and wondering, what on earth am I doing out here? And if you can push through those initial feelings of I'm insane to be trying this, then you will find such a joy and such a love for doing this. And I think my original interest in trail skating started because I thought this could be an option for alternative transportation. Nick and I share a car, and sometimes I don't necessarily want to be on my bike, and I think it would be a lot more fun to go somewhere on skates. And so we've been really looking through different routes around town. We're trying to figure out which ones are more transportation routes, which ones are more fun routes, which routes are good for beginners. So we're going to really quickly run through just a couple of our favorite routes and why.
So one that we use a lot, which is actually in Johnson, is the Vansiac Trailhead. And that's because it's a relatively flat area and it's wide open and not very busy. And so it's really good just to go and kind of practice the trails. There are some minor hills, and so you do get to experience what it's like to kind of go up and down the hills without too much risk. And then there's occasionally debris as well, so you get to practice dodging that. But there are some considerations related to debris that we'll talk about in a bit. But other than that, we've also done Walker Park to Kessler Mountain. That one's a little more advanced. There is one hill in particular that's pretty challenging. So, you know, worst case scenario, if you're brand new, you could skate most of it and then just take your skates off and walk up or down the really difficult sections.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And then what we were thinking too about discussing is what makes a fun route. And it depends on your skill level, and it depends on whether you love hills or whether you don't like hills and you just want to kind of cruise along. So the Neocasca Trail Corridor is really nice for just a general cruise. There aren't very many real hills involved, and there aren't really many road crossings in there. So we really like that particular route if we just feel like cruising. And I want to give a really big shout out before we move on from this particular topic and shout out the Arkansas roller skate crew run by Clementine Simpson. She is a Fayetteville native and she has a great presence. It's on Instagram and I think she just started a WhatsApp group. And she is really good for taking out complete beginners and teaching them from ground zero. There are a number of different resources and people you can follow on Instagram, and we will link some of those resources below. And we even have a trail skating group called Fayetteville Trail Skaters, and we can link to that WhatsApp group. But basically, you're going to get all sorts of levels of people. You're going to get people on quads versus inlines, and you'll have people who have all these different ways to deal with debris and hills, and they'll have safety gear suggestions. And before we move on from this topic, I wanted to share a little bit about this dream that we have.
And but just before we do that, I wanted to mention that on this past St. Patrick's Day, we went on a trail skate with the Arkansas Roller Skate crew from Wilson Park to Fossil Cove and back. So, you know, there's definitely ways to get around with skates, even in, you know, the city where the trails may seem intimidating. Just keep the faith. You can do it. And it's actually pretty fun once you get your speed control down.
A couple of other things we wanted to mention before we move on from our skating obsession is Starlight Skadium is our local rink here in Fayetteville, and it's awesome. Adult night is a total scene in a good way. And Tiffany, the owner, recently created the Starlight Mobile Rink, which is basically a food truck that serves up skates and has a little portable floor that can be set up anywhere. Their first event is going to be a pop-up at Drake Field during the eclipse, and it would be a really good opportunity for newer skaters and more experienced skaters to meet up, have an incredible experience together, and experience the joy of skating during a very unique event. And that brings us to our dream of Skateville, which we are hoping that someday people will recognize what a wonderful place Fayetteville is for skaters. And hopefully we can do some city-sponsored events or city-adjacent events and use the hashtag Skateville and just get people out there understanding how cool this city can be on skates, as long as you do it safely and as long as you understand what you're getting into and have all the right gear.
Yeah, and in case you've been living under a rock, the eclipse is April 8th around 2 p.m. But we also probably want to talk more, maybe a different time about this, but we want to go into quads versus inlines when it comes to skating. But I feel like that we could talk for hours about that, and mm-hmm. we want to move on to some other topics for this particular episode.
And we have some guests in mind to maybe come on and speak from their own experience on those topics. Okay.
So next up, we'll do something that's a little more in our normal wheelhouse, and that would be Fayetteville's Permit Ready Building Design Program. And we're pretty excited about this one. This is something that Britton Bostick and others in the city have put together, and it really cuts some of the red tape associated with new builds and ADUs, or backyard cottages, if you will, which are allowed by right in many areas. So what the point of this is that a lot of people want to build infill, or they want to build an ADU in their backyard, or whatever it might be, but you have to figure out your, you know, site plan, your building plans, and you have to get an architect to draw up a plan, then you have to get it permitted and hope it passes the permitting process all before you can even do anything. And what this does is it provides 30 different designs to choose from, which includes a variety of single family homes, townhomes, duplexes, and those ADUs, those backyard cottages. And they're permit ready, meaning they've already gone through review to meet city building codes and all the different considerations that come into permitting. And so you do still have to have a site plan and figure out, you know, is this going to actually fit on my property and be legal? But the need to have your own architect is eliminated, and you have a much more likely smooth process that you'll go through as a result of having these permit-ready designs. So it's really cool because in other cities, they've done stuff like this, but they've only had a handful of designs. And the fact that they have 30 different designs makes this far less likely to look homogenous. And it'll actually fit the neighborhood character in a lot of ways because they've chosen a relatively small area of downtown and south of downtown as a pilot zone for this. And they've specifically made designs that fit into the neighborhood character. So even though this would be new development, which is going to happen for sure in those areas, it won't look like completely out of place. And the reason that they chose this area is that they wanted to find areas with an expected need for new development soon. And that means that the housing age in particular, so a lot of the neighborhoods downtown or south of downtown have older homes, and so there's more likely an opportunity to redevelop there. And a lot of times there's also zoning that is friendly to ADUs and such. So it's a pretty cool program, and we'll link to it on the show notes. Meredith, do you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I thought I'd let the planning commissioner speak on that topic.
I haven't even had my first meeting yet, but by the time we do our next episode, I'll have more to say.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and we'll probably talk about it again on the podcast, and we might have Britton or somebody kind of adjacent back on to go way more into the weeds with that. This is more of a kind of overview of all the projects we're excited about in the area. So we're trying to touch on things briefly, and then we will dive in deeper, especially if y'all let us know which topics you're most excited about. We can try and dig a little deeper into them in the future. So moving on to our next, personally, this is one of the most exciting things I've heard since we've moved here, and it's been nearly 3 years since we've lived in Fayetteville, but this is Combs Park, and Combs Park already exists. It's down in southeast Fayetteville, and originally, the White River had been dammed and used as Fayetteville's water source until, I think, was it the 60s, like the 1960s-ish?
60s or 70s, I forget.
Something like that, yeah. And so ever since they switched to Beaver Lake being our primary water source, the Combs Park area and the pump house and that whole area really has kind of fallen into disrepair. And it's a great little fishing spot. We've seen people fishing down there and we've biked down there, but it hasn't really been something that people necessarily feel safe going to. You definitely can't swim there. It's pretty murky. And it just hasn't been necessarily leveraged for community enjoyment the way it could have been. And recent surveys by the city had shown that people really, really want a natural water source that's accessible for kayaking and swimming and wading. And we really don't have that. They had done a study of Lake Fayetteville and had been really optimistic about potentially making that swimmable, but there were considerations with nearby farmland and some kind of runoff that would cause the type of algae and sediment and contaminants, basically, that would preclude it from being safe for swimming. So I think during these conversations, they returned to some earlier conversations that were taking place like 10 plus years ago, I think, about taking Combs Park, undamming it, and making it part of what's called a blueway. And if you think about our greenway for bikes and skates and pedestrians and scooters, a blueway would be the same thing for boats or tubes or kayaks. And so that's what they're looking at doing for the White River, is having a couple of different put-in spots and then making the Combs Park spot more of kind of a takeout or put-in spot on the White River, where you can also wade and you can swim. And we really are excited about certain aspects of it, just the community aspect of being able to go there and run into people, the fact that, you know, our environment isn't getting any colder, and it'll be really nice to have a natural place to cool off in the summers. And the fact that it's going to be off the greenway, it's going to be a 4-mile ride from downtown Fayetteville on protected paths eventually.
Right. Yeah. They do plan to connect that soon. We did actually bike there, as Meredith mentioned, a few months ago, and it wasn't that bad. Most of it is pretty easy neighborhood streets, but then there's one stretch I think we had to ride on the road. But, you know, it's not ideal, but it wasn't horrible. So you can definitely still get there without those trails, but it'll be really nice to see a proper connection to it once it's built. And I think construction is anticipated to begin in 2025, although it sounds like it'll take a few years to come to fruition. So keep an eye out for that one.
Oh, one other thing before we move on, to anyone who might be listening, we are really hoping that at least part of this area is paved for wheelchair access, for skaters, for cyclists who don't feel necessarily comfortable getting off their bikes to go into the water. And ideally, maybe there's some public art and murals and a food truck park, but we're just so excited. This project for me is, again, is the most exciting thing I've seen since we've moved here, and I'm basically excited about everything in life. So it says a lot to say that this is the thing that excites me more than anything. I am so beyond pumped. And back to the skating thing, I keep even thinking, man, what if the Starlight Mobile Rink can come and set up here and people can get kind of hot skating and then get right into the water to cool off?
Just don't put your skates in the water.
No, it will ruin your bearings. Okay.
Well, that said, one other project we wanted to touch on was the Mission Trail. And this is important to us because we live in Northeast Fayetteville, and we use that corridor to get to downtown quite often. Lately, as it's been under construction, we've used it much less. But We have used it in its current state, which is not done, but it wasn't horrible. I wouldn't recommend it to everyone. You want to have pretty decent tires and things because it is a construction zone, although they've moved all of the real big barriers out of the way. That said, north to Old Wire, the surface is mostly prepped, meaning they've created all the curbs, they've flattened out the dirt, they've prepared the surfaces, but they haven't laid down any concrete yet. And from what I understand, it's because they are waiting for a final set of utility poles to be moved. SWEPCO came in about a month ago, and they moved all of their utility poles over so that the trail could be built there. But there's one more vendor that they're waiting to move their poles, AT&T. And so they are just dragging their feet, and I don't quite understand why, but it's probably just a staffing issue.
Yeah, they probably have other projects beyond our little trail.
Yeah, but I still wanted to shame them because they're single-handedly holding up the completion of this, so they do need to be shamed a little bit. But that said, it's probably something out of their control. Well, I don't know, maybe not. But anyways, from Rush to North, which is just that little segment after you pass North going south, is complete except for the street trees. So they have new nice lighting in there. They've built some fences for the residents there. Some of them are privacy fences, some are iron type fences. And they have a new at grade red colored crossing across Rush, which is really, really nice. And we've biked that section as well. And it's really nice to have that. And so it just is a taste of what's to come across that whole street. And we're excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have the new crosswalk lights reconnected as well, which was,
yes.
We tried it a few times before those were reconnected, and it was a little bit feeling of taking our lives in our own hands.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, they fixed them. We feel really good about using it in its current state. And as long as you aren't trying to take a road bike on it and you have maybe some hybrid wheels or thicker, you should be okay using it. But if you feel uncertain, you could probably pop off your bike and walk it over that gravelly area because it's not complete.
Yep.
But we're super stoked about this one. And speaking of new bike lanes, there is a newish bike lane that's been opened on Appleby Drive. And we wanted to give this a shout out because it's a nice improvement, as we do sometimes use this route on occasion. There's some armadillos and there's a painted bike lane that basically just makes drivers more aware that you are there as a cyclist.
Yeah, and they're not technically armadillos because armadillos are a little bit larger and bumpier. I think they use sort of like they're like green, almost like plastic.
Oh,
that
yeah,
are
yeah,
low,
yeah.
The lower profile. So when a car hits them, they're not as,
okay,
bumpy, I suppose.
Yes.
I think it's more appealing to a lot of people because they're not quite as large and armadillo looking. But armadillos are probably a little safer for the people in the cycle track. So, but it's a compromise.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, we're excited about that one. And another project that we're really excited about is the Poplar Street Pump House Community Art Wall. And anyone who's used the Greenway on the west side has probably already seen this project. It's at the Poplar Street crossing, and it used to be just an old brick building that was kind of hanging out there, just looking bricky. And recently, Joanna Bell, shout out, she's awesome. She is the arts and cultural director of the city of Fayetteville.
She's been on our podcast.
Yes, that's right. She has been on our podcast. And check that episode out if you haven't heard it. But she made this project possible. And it's so cool. It is a four-wall building, obviously. And each of the four walls is a rotating art project. So it's the type of thing where it's a little sad because sometimes people go to this wall and they produce the most incredible works of art. And then they'll be covered up by new works of art. But that's the whole idea of this project. And Olivia Trimble, who is a local artist, she runs Sleet City, and she did the Fayetteville is My Favoriteville mural and the Love Unites Us mural. She was very heavily involved in this project as well. So we wanted to give them a shout out. It's a really cool project. Both of us are very passionate about murals and public art because not everybody's idea of art involves going to a ballet or a show or a museum, but everybody, we believe, has some appreciation for some type of art. And we happen to fall into the category of outdoor art enthusiasts.
Definitely. And one other thing I wanted to mention is lately there's been a lot of talk about affordable housing and the affordable housing crisis we have here and honestly across the whole nation, although it's particularly acute here just because we have such a fast-growing area and we have the university, which is growing its enrollment, which doesn't help things. So The affordable housing resolutions have been contentious at times due to a difference primarily in how different council members wanted to approach the situation. I do believe that most of the people involved, if not all of them, in good faith do want to help the problem. I just think that they all have different ways that they want to go about it. That said, lately things seem to be moving in a good direction. There seems to be some consensus or at least compromise. And, you know, the reality is that unless we build more housing faster than the demand or we reduce the university enrollment year over year, not much is likely to change. I do think that we need to take action to help however we can. But in some senses, it's a numbers game, which is, you know, a little frustrating, I think, to a lot of people and deservedly so. And so I think this is really why we need to reduce barriers to new construction when it's appropriate. And this involves proactive rezoning, such as the 71B corridor plan and beyond, because a lot of times developers don't want to take the risk to buy a property and then try to rezone it for a more dense use, especially when it's in a great area for it, and then have it torpedoed by something that comes up in the process where they don't get the zoning through. So if the city proactively rezones a lot of parcels, then that makes things a lot easier for the developers because they can know that if they buy something, they can develop it and it will much more likely go through. So I think that hopefully, you know, the permit ready building design program is one way they're helping. The proactive rezoning is another. There's also attainable housing projects such as Big Emma in Springdale. And those are also helpful, although I am a little bit worried that the impact will still be too small just because of the expected growth of this region. But it is nice to see that there are LIHTC-funded developments going in to help with that attainable housing. So is there anything else you wanted to add on that, Meredith?
No, but it does make a really good spot to jump into what I think is our final topic for today's episode that's near and dear to our hearts, because there is a property for sale that adjoins, abuts, whatever word you want to use, but it basically backs to Gully Park. It's on Township Boulevard, and it's the Township Baptist Church. Now, it's listed for, I believe, $1.4 million. Yeah, that is not cheap, but it's a gorgeous building. If you like wood paneling, which I do, it is a gorgeous building. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's a park-adjacent lot, so there's so much potential. And in our first episode, when we were first kind of like dreaming on the mic, I remember saying we would love to see something similar near that Old Wire Church of Christ, which is on the other side of Gully Park, more or less. And so we've spoken with people over the past couple of years, and every Gully resident that we've spoken with personally has said, I just wish there were something walkable. I wish there were some sort of coffee shop or cafe or food hall or something along those lines. And we feel like this building is perfect because I believe it's on a pretty large lot. I forgot to look it up before the episode, but isn't it several acres?
I don't know for sure, but it can accommodate a few different things, which is nice.
Yes. And so that was kind of what we were thinking, is this church is such a beautiful focal point, and you could build some dense urban housing on what's already a busy corridor. It's Township Boulevard. And it's also backing to the park, so it would make people be able to have green space right at their backyard, kind of like the Gully Grove development that's on the other side of the park. You could also make it into mixed use, and you could include a food hall or a coffee shop or really anything, a cafe. But it would be such a wonderful community meeting spot that would be right up against the park, which this is another note I wanted to say, is we were recently told, and I don't know that we've confirmed this, but it sounds like it is happening. Most of the parks in Fayetteville are going to be rezoned to a special park zoning that would be able to allow things like a coffee shop in them, because people will drive all the way up to Bentonville to go to the Kohler Mountain Airship coffee shop just for that experience of being able to walk to a coffee shop in the woods. So we're hopeful that someone with deep pockets and big dreams will hear this episode or maybe see some of the conversations online about this property and choose to take a chance on the area. So if you have the money and the vision and the desire to develop that spot, reach out to us independently, and we would love to help you out with just ideas and gaining community support for it.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because that particular parcel will not be part of the rezoning for the parks because it's not technically part of the park. And it comes back to what I said earlier about a rezone of that is not a guarantee. So someone who's buying it, especially for $1.4 million, is taking a chance that they may not be able to rezone it, at least not to the zoning that they want.
The fact that someone would need to go in and get that plot of land rezoned could be a major turnoff, especially at that cost. It even was raised at a recent city council meeting by one of our reps for Ward 3, just about the prohibitive price to put down on a building like that, only to potentially find out that this dream that you have couldn't come to fruition. So we're hopeful that this could be turned into a mix of like a cottage court, or maybe have a small business in there, or even a rotating sort of almost booth for people who want to come in and they want to serve coffee or scones or whatever they want to do. It doesn't have to be something big and just absolutely crazy. It could be the tiniest little project alongside some housing, but we just feel like there's such a huge opportunity here, and hopefully somebody listening will want to run with this.
Yeah, it'll be really cool to see. But with that said, I think that's all we want to talk about today, and we just thank you for letting us kind of wax poetic on the mic and just talk about what we like. But we really hope to get some new interviews going pretty soon once things calm down with us, and we are excited to bring that to you. So stay tuned. We might still have a bit of a delay before our next episode, but as we think of things to tell you, we will be on the mic and sharing with you.
Yep. And I wanted to add, because some of the people listening are people that we have reached out to in the past to be on the podcast, we still have you on our list. We want to reach out. We've just been having some scheduling issues and sick cat drama and all that fun stuff. So we're trying to just kind of get our ducks in a row, but we will be reaching out to everyone we've spoken with in the past and said that we want to interview you. We were not just planning to ghost you. It's going to happen. So we'll be in touch. And thank you all for your patience. Just listeners, people we plan to interview, thanks for sticking with us. And we hope to really ramp things up this summer.
Yeah, thank you. And does Sherlock want to say anything?
Sherlock, you want to say hi on the mic? There we go.
That's our cat, Sherlock.
19.
We recorded this episode at home, unlike our usual location at the library. So with that note, we'll bid you adieu.